Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Best Ever You Show with your host, Elizabeth Hamilton Guarino, CEO and founder of the Best Ever You Network, helping you live your life to the fullest. How? Real people, including celebrities, real advice, real places, products, and businesses, real life stories. It's all right here for you with this radio show, printed magazine, websites, community, and more. Remember to visit us online, too, at besteveryou.com. And now here's your host, CEO and founder of the Best Ever You Network, Elizabeth Hamilton Guarino.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Best Ever You Show. And we don't quite have that intro fixed yet because we have our co-host, Dr. Katie Eastman, back with us now that she has moved all the way across country from Maine to the Seattle, Washington area. Hello, Dr. Katie.
Good morning.
This is quite a moment, isn't it? We're having moments this week, but this is a huge one, isn't it?
It is. I just am remembering all the hours spent in front of the TV set watching soap operas. And, you know, I became a social worker for a reason. I just can see where my life started in front of that television.
I think mine too. You know, I don't know. I used to skip school to watch these soap operas. I did. I admit it. I used to actually stay home from school. I bet I'm not alone in that.
Oh, no.
And this is, yeah, just so this is a moment for us. And we have Lee Philip Bell with us today. And Lee, you know, you paved the way, I think, Lee, for us to even be here. You've changed
well,
a lot. Yeah, I mean, you were on TV before even Oprah and everybody in Chicago. And so it's a big deal to be sitting here as women on the radio.
Yes. Well, I was on for 30 years in Chicago and the states around, and it was lots of fun.
Yeah, some of the shows are Shopping with Miss Lee, The Lee Phillips Show, Meet Miss Lee, Noon Break, and Lee Phillips Chicago. But the heart of everything was always you. You're known for greeting your guests with sincerity, enthusiasm, expertise, warmth, and just it's just amazing. And a lot of your broadcasts have been preserved in the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. So
yes, thanks to Bruce Dumont.
Yeah, that's a really big honor. But we're here today, and I also want to introduce Michael Maloney, who's here with us. Hi, Michael. How are you today?
I'm very well. How are you doing?
Good. And really, both of you are here with us today for the hour to talk about this wonderful book that you've written, The Young and the Restless Life of William J. Bell. And Michael, you wrote this with Lee, correct?
Correct.
I love it.
Well, he really wrote it.
Thank you, Lee, but your contributions were immeasurable. The book never would have happened without you. It wouldn't be what it is without you.
Yes, yeah, it's an amazing book. I have a copy here. No, Katie does not, but I do. And, you know, before we get going into everything, just to tell people who you are a contributing editor at Soaps in Depth magazine, and you began your TV career as a page at CBS Television City and worked for 2 years on the production staff of The Bold and the Beautiful. And you're the former West Coast editor of Soap Opera Digest, and you've also been on staff at Soap Opera Magazine, Soap Opera Update, In Touch, and Inside TV. Is it safe to say, Michael, that you love soap operas?
I think that is a safe bet, yes. I am very passionate about them.
Where did that passion come from?
You know, I think like a lot of us, you know, our moms had them on TV when we were growing up, or in Bill's case, on the radio, and then on television when TV came along, and we just kind of got hooked on them. They were on in an era before the internet, before computers, before cable, and you know, they were there. They were and are the entertainment of America.
Oh yeah, yeah. And we're here to honor one of the greats. You know, there's no one like William J. Bell.
That's right.
He was a wonderful man.
Yeah, absolutely. And your family, you have three children. Laura
yes.
Lee, Laura, Tell me the name of Laura Lee. That's the one I know.
Bradley and Bill.
And Bill, okay. And then how many grandkids?
We have 8.
Oh, that's so cute. And what are the ages of grandkids? I love grandkids. They're so adorable.
They're from 10 years old to 17 and almost 18.
Wow.
Chasen is going to go to college this next year.
Oh, doesn't that go by so fast?
It does. It does very rapidly.
Now, has your life ever been a soap opera?
No. I don't think so, but maybe it was.
Mine sometimes seems like it is. You never know, Katie, right?
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
It's a lot
but
of
it's kids. A great question, because what I'm wondering is, where did some of the ideas come from to put in some of the issues?
Yes. Well, many of the ideas came from Bill. I contributed the ideas about child abuse and I don't know what other ideas.
Well, I think you tackled so many of the social issues on your talk show.
That's right.
And that helped inspire Bill and give him ideas to tell them in dramatic form and then not only certainly entertain his viewers, which he did, but also educate them.
Right. Yes, he did.
Hmm. Go ahead.
I was going to say, it was always done in a way that wasn't preachy or hitting people over the head. It was just through entertainment. You love the characters that
he did.
That's right. People learned about alcoholism through Kay Chancellor, and they love Kay, and they went on with her on her journey to see her, you know, conquer her demons.
Yeah. Now, before soap operas and so forth, Lee, you reported on so many of these social issues that you received a number of Emmys for your reporting.
Yes, I got about, I don't know, 12 or 13.
Oh, Emmys. Yeah. Wow, that's just what an honor. And you tackled topics like breast cancer and teen pregnancy, rape, and so forth, which have never really were talked about on TV.
That's right. Yeah.
What was that like? What kind of position did that put you in when you were, you know, on TV reporting topics like that? Did you get criticism or praise?
Oh, we got mostly praise. And we got, of course, some criticism. But I didn't take that into account. I knew we'd get some criticism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot on Best Ever Year, we talk a lot about living in courage and not living in fear. I was wondering if you would touch on that a little bit.
Well, you have to have courage to live. I think you just must have courage to carry on every day, and with the bills and the problems and the sickness and everything, you have to have courage.
What's the most courageous thing you've ever done in your life?
Well, I suppose it was getting over my son's accident when he was 8 years old. My older son and his friend ran across the street from our house to the park. And then my younger son ran across the street, but he didn't look both ways. And a car hit him, and he went flying in the air and came down on his head. And my husband rushed out, and we had a baby then, our daughter, Laura-Lee. And they went to the hospital, and then I got someone to watch over Laura-Lee, and I went to the hospital, and Bradley was operated on, and they thought he'd lose his eye, and he shattered his head but they put it all back together again, and he's wonderful. He's marvelous.
Katie.
Yeah.
Yes,
I
was, he is.
You're asking, okay.
Oh, no, I was just going to have you, I was going to have you take that one, sorry.
Well, really, I work with parents with kids in the hospital all the time, and one of the things that I would love to ask you, Lee, is where'd you get that courage?
Oh, I don't know. It's certainly, I think I got it from my parents. They were wonderful people. My father had a flower shop, and my mother was a bookkeeper, and they were full of courage. And I don't know where they got it, probably from their parents.
How did you do everything that you did, you achieved with three children? Because that's probably in a time where that wasn't, I bet a lot of people stayed home.
That's true. But my mother worked, and I was when I graduated from Northwestern, and I went to work for my dad in the flower shop, and then I was asked to be on television with my older brother, and he did a wonderful job. And they came out, and they asked him to be on again. He said, "How much do you pay?" And they said, "We don't pay anything." So he said, "I won't do it." And he said, "Maybe my kid's sister will." And I said, "Oh, yes, I'd love to." So they asked me on. I wasn't paid at all. And I brought the flowers down, and I arranged them backwards so that the audience could see them as well. And I did it from the backside. I arranged the flowers, and I did Hawaiian flowers the first week, and they were just overjoyed. They loved it. And then I did a few more weeks, and then the opportunity came, because the woman that was doing the television program on that station, WBKB, was going on vacation. She was going to Japan. And so she interviewed all the ladies in television, and she decided she'd pick me because I wouldn't give her any trouble. Well, she did pick me, and I then started learning all the introductions. At the beginning, when you turn on the station, you have to say a whole page full of things about all the things that are contained and maintained in the station. And then you go on to the programming. And I got through that, and I went to the programming, and that was when Gary Moore was on morning television, and Arthur Godfrey was on television, and then I'd have lunch during that time, and then I would have a program on television for 25 minutes. It was about an interview show, and then I would continue to announce, and then I did a show at 5:10, and it was a Shopping with Miss Lee show. And then I did the show in the evening, which was In Town Tonight. And that I would put on a formal dress, and I would introduce the show and introduce the singers, and we had Cesar Petrillo's orchestra there with about, there must have been 40 musicians that would play the music, but that was how I started.
Oh, I love it. And isn't it neat how, as you're talking, I hear just this pure love of this format?
Yes, I did love it.
Oh.
And I worked Saturday and Sunday also.
Yeah, well, you can hear it in your voice. And the one thing you touched on, isn't it amazing how when you love to do something, you do it for free?
Yeah, well, I didn't do it for free then. When WBBM took over CBS in Chicago, they paid me a little money.
But isn't it amazing how you do that just because you love it, and you know, and it sounds like also that you learned. You weren't one of
those
people who, I know everything, and move out of my way kind of thing. You learned.
Right. That's right. You learn a lot every day.
You know, there's someone who strikes me as kind of having that take as well, and that's the person who wrote the intro to your book, and that's David Hasselhoff.
Oh.
He seems like he was just an appreciative soul.
Well, Bill went to meet him. I guess he lived, I don't know, Michael, if you know, he lived in Wisconsin or in Illinois.
Yeah, his family was from there. And, David,
that's right.
David's remarkable because he, a lot of people, when they leave soaps, they don't, you know, they pretend they were never on them. But David truly values, it's sad, but it's true. And David truly values his time at The Young and the Restless, and Bill, is very special to him, and he is too. And he was just terrific with that introduction or forward, I should say.
Forward. Yeah, he seems like he's just genuinely just a sweetheart.
Yeah,
with everything that he says. Yeah,
he was a sweetheart.
I don't know
if he is today, but.
I don't know him at all, so I have no idea. But there's a lot that people go through. It's amazing. Of Michael, of everything in the book here, what was the most fun part to write, and what was the most difficult part to write?
Oh, that's a great question. The most fun part, I think, was coming up with the chapter titles. Bill had worked in advertising prior to connecting with Erna Phillips, his mentor in the soap opera world, and he worked in advertising in the 50s. So I thought, well, you know, that's easy. I'll call that chapter Mad Men, because he had a very good friend, Jerry Byrne, from that time, and they reconnected about 30 years later and worked in soap operas together. And so I thought that would be a fun title. And then when I wrote a chapter on Bill and Lee's daughter, Laura Lee, and her experience of becoming an actress on the show, even though it was a very unique experience in that she was on a television show, there was also something very relatable about their relationship. And so I called that chapter Take Your Daughter to Work Day, which is something I think a lot of fathers do with their daughters. And in a sense, that's what Bill did. It was just in a different way. And did you say the most challenging part?
Yeah. What was the most difficult part?
Well, there were, as people will read later in the chapter, in the book, there were some, a few personal areas where I had to go into, later in life, that were very sensitive, but everyone was very understanding and made it easy for me. Another challenging part was writing about the shows in an era before I started watching them. Bill had written As the World Turns when I was just a child, and I was not familiar with it, so I was able to actually call my mom and ask her about some of the outlandish things that the character of Lisa was doing. And this is kind of funny. One of the things that Lisa did on As the World Turns back in the early 60s was she took the household account money from her husband, and she used it to hire a maid to do all the cleaning around the house. And then she went out shopping, and then she would come home, and then her husband would come home and said, "Oh, you've worked so hard and you've cleaned the house." And at the time, that was incredibly scandalous for a housewife to do something like that.
I don't like it.
Sounds kind of fun.
Well, yeah, and even today it would be, you know, it would be a treat. But back
just
then,
gave me a great idea.
It was something, you know. She knew how to make a dollar stretch to get the to get the housekeeper and the shopping done. But I thought something like that was funny. Bill wrote great fantasies, and viewers just loved watching them.
Yeah, you know, I'm reading parts of the book as we're talking because you know, you, as we're on air, it's kind of fun to just see what I land on here. And I landed on the page. It just opened it randomly, but I landed on Victor Newman, and talking about, which is Eric Braeden.
Yes.
A little bit about him here, and we had the good fortune of interviewing him on the Best Ever You show just probably over 2 months ago or so, and he was with us for like an hour and 15 minutes. And my point here is, how have some of these cast and crew members become family to you?
Oh, they easily do, don't they, Michael? Yes,
they do. It's very similar.
Yes.
I mean, we work with them for, you know, it's going on decades now.
Oh yeah.
We know his wife and his son and his son's children, and he's very nice, unless he's angry. And then when he's angry, he's pretty volatile.
Yeah, pretty intense. Yeah, he was very interesting to speak with on the phone. But I just noticed all of these different people. But your husband has been called one of the two most creative geniuses in the television business. One was Norman Lear, and the other is Bill Bell.
Oh, wonderful! That's a great person to be connected with.
And yeah, I think they were very, very similar. And you know, Norman, of course, used sitcoms to get social messages out to his audience through his characters, you know, foibles and weaknesses and things, you know, like Archie Bunker. And then Bill would use dramatic form to get the same messages out to people, to hopefully educate as well as entertain.
Yeah. Katie, in all of this, what are you thinking about right now?
Well,
hear you.
I'm thinking about how wonderful he was, such a creative genius. But I'm also wondering if there's a story that sticks out to Lee that tells us what she would like us to most know about him personally.
Well, he was a wonderful father. He always took time with his children, and they all loved him so very much. And he was great on vacations. They were really short, but he was wonderful. He was a very lovable person. Maybe at the studio he wasn't so lovable, but at home he was, and he was just a great person. I can't think of it. And I don't think we ever had an argument about anything. Of course, we didn't spend a whole lot of time together, but no, we got along very well. He was always writing at this typewriter, always writing, and he would stay up till much late. I would go to bed at 11 o'clock p.m. of course, and he would go to bed about midnight or 1, and then get up at 5, and then he'd go to his typewriter and he'd type and type and type and type. Well, you know, he typed all the shows until Kay Alden came to work with him, and then he had to train her and Jack Smith and the many other writers that he had.
Yeah, I remember a typewriter. Oh, I can't even imagine. I had a typewriter. Let's see, I'm 40, almost 43, and I had a typewriter. They taught us typing in high school, and then this new thing came out where with an autocorrect where it would back up and like put like a white piece of something over your But that was just
sure.
like the paper and
the backspacing. That was great.
Yeah, the backspacey thing. But Katie, can you imagine typing?
Oh,
so like
yeah, I can because I was 10 years ahead of you, and we didn't have that.
Really?
No, I'm aging myself here, but yeah, we didn't have. I often think what my life would have been like had I had backspacing in college and things that we were doing, because it really took so much time when you made a mistake to go back and you'd have to retype the whole thing, or you'd have to use that silly white stuff and it would look horrible and your professors would be angry.
And so
I can only imagine why he had to take that much time.
And kids today just can download that term paper off the internet, copy and paste it, and turn it right in.
Can you imagine...
I'm kidding, but
yeah,
I
I get it. Yeah, no, they do.
In comparison, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
I wonder what he would have been like, you know, starting out with, for example, just like even having email.
You know, there were a lot of technological changes since Bill started writing soap operas in the mid 50s through the late 90s. Scripts used to be typed on a 7-sheet document with carbon pieces in between each page, so that different copies of the script could go to different departments. And the last script, on the last page was pretty faint. So whoever got that one, you know, had some trouble. But Bill saw technology in terms of, overnight mail, things like FedEx, when he would send scripts in from Chicago or whatever overnight delivery service he used. Photocopy machines, which could make copies and copies of scripts for different departments. He had an IBM Selectric typewriter, and there's a funny story in the book where he was on the phone on a conference call with one of his writers, and this is in the early 90s, and the writer started, screaming, and he said, "What's wrong?" And the writer said, my computer screens are all disappearing, and I haven't saved the material." So they lost hours and hours of work.
Oh,
and Bill took it very well in stride. He understood these things happen, and I was working on the show at the time, and he came down to a group of us, and he was chuckling, and he said, "I hugged my IBM Selectric and said, 'You never do that to me.'" He had a wonderful sense of humor. He was very dry-witted. And
yes, he did have a great sense of humor.
Absolutely.
I think he would almost have to be able to write drama.
Yes.
It almost plays into it a little bit. You have to have because imagine if he took life so serious. Did he take life so super seriously, like unbelievably serious?
No, I don't think so. I think he took his dramas seriously, but life he took with a grain of salt.
Yeah. I'm reading, Michael, that he wasn't a really big fan of, as we're talking about humor and so forth, I'm reading that he wasn't really a big fan of the comedy in soaps.
He didn't want to see shtick. He didn't want to see people going for the laugh. If humor happened, humor is very hard to do, and humor in dramatic television is especially hard to do. And Bill would have some characters that were comical, but he used them sparingly, and he did not want anyone to make light of soap operas because he knew his audience did not. The audience he knew is deeply invested in these characters and what happens to them, and he did not want them taken lightly. He attended, and this is in the book, he attended the screening of Soap Dish back in the early 90s, and that was a movie that poked a lot of fun at soap operas, and some of it was funny, and some of it was a little bit off the mark, I think, in a lot of people's opinion, certainly mine. But Bill was uncomfortable through the screening. He did not care for how those
that was
were
so
being
funny.
Made fun of. Yeah, yeah. He really didn't, because he took it seriously.
No, I.
Well,
know, I think,
and as a, oops, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead. Go ahead. We do that here.
Well, one of the things that is so valuable to me as someone who works with these social issues on a daily basis is that he did go deep. His characters were not trite. They did not recover immediately. You watched them struggle. You watched them go through the daily experiences. So people got a very vivid, realistic picture of what their neighbors were going through. And I think that was a huge contribution to our whole society in that respect.
I agree with you. He took everything seriously. And I think that was good.
Was there any one issue that was hardest for him to write about?
I don't think so. I think he, sometimes he would do a lot of research before he started writing. And he would look into the problem, you know, if they were medical problems or mental problems or physical, whatever. But he would check with doctors, and he would check with his writers to make sure that they knew everything about it that he did. And he was very meticulous about things.
It sounds like he was meticulous not only about things, but with going back to all the people, it sounds like he really took care of the actors and people and cast and so forth that were in his life.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Bill, when Gene Cooper had alcoholism, he kept her going and watched over her and took care of her. And he really did a wonderful job. And she did, too. She's great now, and she's still an actress, and she's still marvelous.
Yeah, she's one of my favorites. That's
yeah.
Good to hear.
Yeah,
I really like her.
She's one of my favorites, too.
Yeah, she seems like she is just a really nice person in life, too.
Yeah, just she is. She has a lovely family and lots of grandchildren and dogs and everything.
That's funny. Michael, were you going to add to what we were saying?
Yeah. I was going to say that Bill took care of people sometimes in a way that they were unaware of. He took headaches away from people in a way that was just effective and, you know, got the ridiculousness over with. And he took care of people. There was... I didn't put this story in the book, but there was an employee who had been let go within the organization of his shows by a supervisor, and it was done in kind of the heat of the moment. And the employee went to Bill and said, you know, this has happened, and I just don't think it's fair. And Bill picked up the phone, called the supervisor, and said, you know, the employee is coming to work tomorrow. Thank you. Goodbye. And he just handled it without a lot of drama, and he knew that it was going to blow over and that things could go back to the way they were. And I don't think a lot of bosses would have done something like that.
No.
He did it effectively without a lot of drama, and he took care of the situation.
That's commendable for sure. I'm looking again here. I'm wanting to shift gears and talk a little bit maybe about Brad. Could we do that?
Yes.
Just so we keep an eye on time. We've got about 25 minutes left. But what's Brad's role in everything? Because it sounds like he won Daytime Emmys in 2010, and he's really writing.
Oh, he does a marvelous job. But when he was in school, he read a book that he was studying, and it said, Bill Bell said something, something, something. And he called his father, and he said, are you in this book? are you the person that said this and this and this? And his father said, well, I don't know. You know? And then Bradley found out it was his father, and he did write all these things. Because when the children were children, they didn't watch the shows, you know, but when they started to grow up, then they watched them. And Bradley watched the shows constantly when he was in college, and then he came to work for us, and he developed into a wonderful writer and producer, and he did very well.
Yeah, and is carrying on all of those social issues.
Oh, yes.
Also,
yes.
You know, there's a quote here in the book, Michael, that you wrote, so many people are just a paycheck away from homelessness or living in a shelter. Our entire production company has been changed by this experience. And what did he do there for the show?
That quote is from Brad, and he said it in regards to some social issue storylines that The Bold and the Beautiful did down in the homeless section of downtown Los Angeles, where he shed light on the plight of some people who have fallen on hard times. And Brad even, has employed some of the people there as background artists on The Bold and the Beautiful, and is, has certainly...
And he goes down there every once in a while. Wow,
yes.
And goes to the functions.
Absolutely, the whole show has gone down and helped out serving food, and I think that's something that Brad has learned from his parents about being socially aware. Something that that Lee and Bill, taught their children about at a very early age, and the importance of taking care of people who, you know, may not have as much.
Yeah.
I mean, I have to say that when I worked for Lee about 20 years ago in the production office, and any time there was someone who called who wanted to get into the business, Lee would meet with them and encourage them and, you know, show them the set. And these were most often usually big, big fans of the show and fans of soap opera who wanted to work in it. And there wasn't always a job for every last person. However, Lee always makes time for people, and there's always time and a moment to show a little kindness to someone who wants to work in the business. I think that was just terrific.
Yeah. Now, I don't know how to ask this, so I'm just going to ask it, but I feel sad asking this, and Alzheimer's affects my family. Even my grandmother is in a nursing home right now with Alzheimer's, and she's 90. And I'm wondering how I just wonder what you. Yeah, I noticed, but it's a really hard question.
Well,
it makes us all sad. And, go ahead.
When Bill got Alzheimer's, I didn't even know it. A friend of ours did. They were playing cards, and she said, "Bill has Alzheimer's." And I said, "No, he doesn't." And she said, "Yes, he does." And I said, "No, he can't." And I thought about it for a while and watched him, and he did. He had it for about, I don't remember how many years, but he stayed at home. We had him at a home. And he lived at home, and he'd go out with the driver, and he'd drive around, and he'd look at different things, and he had a very pleasant time, but he got worse and worse, and then he got really sick, and then we took him to the hospital.
Where?
And that's when he died.
Hmm. How do you, that's what you were saying initially is very similar to my husband's father passed away from Alzheimer's, and it was you know, total denial for the whole family.
That's right.
At first as well, you know,
yes,
he does not,
yes.
You know, but how they discovered it is he came home from work and drove up into the neighbor's home and walked in.
Oh.
And thought that,
wow.
that was his house, and that was sort of
sure.
the start of it. And I noticed Brad wrote that into the storylines and so forth, but are you as a family supporting, I have no idea if you are or not, so if
oh,
I
yes,
ask
this we or
not, but supporting Alzheimer's causes
yes.
and so forth?
Absolutely. Yes. But do you see, when Bill had it, there weren't many assistant programs for men or women that had Alzheimer's. And we went to the program that they had, and the woman was a little sharp, and well, we didn't like her, so we didn't go back.
Yeah.
But then we knew he had it, and we watched him carefully.
Yeah. Katie, did you want to add anything? Or Michael?
Well, I think I would love to ask the question. My mom recently passed away, and she suffered from dementia. Mm. And I know that it's really tough on families when they're caregiving, going through that process. What
yeah.
was most helpful to you and your family getting through it?
Well, we just knew he had it, and and we helped him in every way we could, and that's the way we got through it.
You know, on Best Ever You, we have this saying, I'm not going to repeat it perfectly, but it's like in those moments where life has just thrown you a just an awful situation and so forth, you really have a choice, again, to be sad or carry on and be
yes.
happy. How have you stayed okay?
Well, I continued to work half days, and then I would spend the rest of the day with Bill, and we would talk a little, and he seemed very happy then, mm-hmm. and. It was difficult, sure, but
yeah.
we got through it.
Bill
Michael.
Continued to come into the studio after
yes.
he retired
sure.
in 98, because you can imagine how difficult it would be after you've done something that you love
uh-huh.
every day for 40-plus years and then to not do it. You know, he continued to watch the shows, he read scripts, and he would visit the sets, where he actually didn't spend a lot of time during his career because he was busy writing the show, and he hired, once the scripts were done, he hired people to bring it to life, and he was not down there, you know, micromanaging. But after he retired, he would go down to the sets and watch, you know, his characters and the actors bring the stories to life, and I think that brought him a lot of
He loved doing that.
Yeah.
He loved going down to the studio, and he loved watching the actors, and that was his great his greatest way of spending time.
When he passed it, when he passed away, you had a reception at the Beverly Hills Hotel. When you have receptions like that, is there any part of that that's happy, where you're remembering someone in a positive and happy way,
I was in a trance.
Yeah.
For about a year and a half.
There, that's
I,
yeah. That's
I don't
what
remember
I wanted.
anything about what we did or what we didn't. I mean, when he passed away so beautifully. He was in bed at the hospital, and all the family was there, and we were all hugging him, and he just went to sleep, I mean, it looked like he went to sleep, but he really left this world. And then we all got up and said goodbye to each other and went home. And then I don't remember what happened after that. I was just in a daze. I missed him and I loved him and it was awful.
No, I get it. Yeah, completely. I didn't know if, I just didn't know, so I'm just asking.
No,
yeah.
I was there for the reception after the service at the Beverly Hills Hotel, and I thought it was incredibly generous of the family to want to have something where people could come and express their thoughts and emotions and express what Bill had meant to their life. And some of the actors, John McCook and Gene Cooper, who've known Bill for a long, long time, they spoke and they kind of helped make it okay that everyone was there to share and mourn Bill and celebrate his life. But I think it's such a private thing when things happen. And I had to leave Los Angeles suddenly once to go to a family funeral, and I knew I'd be gone for a week at least. And so when I was leaving, this is ridiculous, but I took an unopened container of milk out of my refrigerator and I tried to give it away to a few neighbors because I thought, well, this will spoil while I'm away. And in hindsight, that's such a ridiculous thing. But you go into shock, and you don't know how you're going to get through it, and somehow you do.
It just reminds me of like when my grandfather passed away, and my grandma was just. She was just really never the same. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
That speaks to how much in love they were.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But I think it shows, too, Lee, how just where I'm going with that is just how tremendously strong of a woman you are. I mean, your life is just strength and courage just such a phenomenal example. You must have just the most amazing children because of your role model.
Well, we do have great children.
And grandchildren and people
they're
in your life.
Marvelous.
Katie,
well,
I was thinking, you wanted to chime in. Yeah.
Well, I was thinking it's so close to Father's Day, and the book coming out is just such a great Father's Day gift because – you know, men are constantly looking for ways to learn to be a better dad and to be a better person, a better business person. And there's very little. I was talking to a dad the other day, and he said, you know, there's very little that we read that isn't designed for us. And especially, he happened to be a bereaved father. And so I'm just thinking about this book as a Father's Day gift because it sounds like he was such a well-rounded human being and a great role model to other men out there. Can you speak to that, Lee?
Well, I think it would be. I hadn't thought of it till now, but yes, I think he was wonderful. He loved his children so very much, and we built a home in California. It was a home that Howard Hughes had lived in for a while, and Spencer Tracy and his lady love stayed in on the weekends. And it had a lot of charm and it was lovely. But we tore it down to the floor and built it up. But we built it up just the same, almost the same as it was. But it was new. And Bill and his son had great arguments about how the house should be built because my oldest son is a businessman, and Bill was partially a business person, but he was more a creative person, and my son couldn't seem to get a connection with the part that was a little bit business. But anyway, they settled things, and everything is wonderful now.
You know, soaps don't just reach the United States. They reach worldwide. And I was wondering if you could just share with us how that works. How does a soap reach worldwide? Because you know they do, because thousands and thousands and millions and millions of people
right.
love
well, my
these characters.
Right. My son has Bold and Beautiful, and that's in Africa and in, well, it's in most of the world. And he travels all over the globe, now my older son is in Paris and in Switzerland and in England. He's there for an art exhibit, but he's there for the show also. And they adore the show. They love it in Greece and Italy and France and all over the world. They have it on at 6 o'clock in the evening in many of the countries. And they really love it, and many of the values and the emotions are international. You know, they have it translated in their own language, and they put their own language in. They have stars that speak, let's say, in France. They have stars that speak French and men that speak French, and they all.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Neat.
And in Egypt, they do the same thing. I don't know what language it is.
I don't know. Yeah. You know, when you were a little kid, is this what you thought you'd be doing?
No. I was an artist when I was a little child. I would draw pictures of flowers and trees and all that. But I suppose most children do.
Sounds like you were probably pretty good at. Can you still draw? Do you ever draw to the stage?
Yes, I do a little bit. Well, I'm now painting. Yes, a little. Just starting to paint.
I love people who paint and draw and stuff. That side of my brain does not work. My mom said, "No, your father was a painter," and I'm like, "Yes." She said, "So somewhere in there's got to be a painter in you." And I said, "Well, I'll tell you what, I'll paint you something, but whatever I paint you, you have to hang on your wall."
Whoa!
No matter how bad it is.
That's not fair.
It's not fair, is it?
You have to paint for a couple years before people put it up.
I can't imagine anything I would ever paint or draw would be going up anywhere. It's just awful. I can barely draw stick figures.
Well, you'll wait until you grow older, and then you'll maybe think that you have the time to do it. And then you might become an artist, a wonderful artist.
Yeah, I bet. I think that'd be really neat to see some of your artwork. I bet that's really a treat.
I bet it is.
I think you're probably saying it's not, but I bet it
it's
is.
Awful.
I don't think so. There's a picture in here in your book with you and Lucille Ball.
Yes. Well, she was on our show, and that was when she had a motion picture that she did. I don't remember the title of it, but she was a great guest. She's a lovely person, and she was a wonderful guest. And we had the mayor on with her, that wasn't that show, but it was, we met in the evening at a nightclub or whatever, and they took a film there, and the mayor was there and his wife, Mayor Daley, but it was mayor, you know, the mayor before the mayor.
I love your wedding dress, too. I'm looking at a picture of you and your wedding in 1954. Oh. What a beautiful, beautiful dress.
Well, I think
where did
that
you get married?
We got married at the Presbyterian Church in Riverside. And then we went to the country club. And the day before we were going to get married, I told Bill that I couldn't get married. I was sorry, but I thought I'd lose my job. And he said, what? And he went across the street to the coroner of Cook County, and they had a couple cocktails down in his basement, and Bill couldn't figure out what happened to his girl. And then my mother said, look, we've invited all the guests, they'll all be there, and you're going to be married tomorrow. And that was it.
That's really funny.
So I was married.
It looks like you have the most, almost like a crown perched on your head. It's just regal and royal looking.
Oh well.
Yes, beautiful.
I'm glad it
still,
was.
You're that's the one thing I know you probably don't want to hear how beautiful you are, but that is we have the
well,
most
I'm not beautiful.
Beautiful
now.
Oh yes,
yes
you are.
You are.
Oh my gosh, you are so stunning. And I just wanted you to know that I thought that anyway, you know.
Well, the dress cost $112, and the top, I don't know, I don't remember how much that cost. Probably 25 or 30.
We had approximately 30 photos for the book, and we wanted each one to tell a story, and there were several rounds of which ones would be included, but we're really proud of the ones that were selected, and the publisher did a fantastic job of reproducing them, I thought.
The publisher has done a wonderful job.
Yeah.
I've got to meet the publisher.
Hopefully you will, Lee. Hopefully we'll be in Chicago, or he will come out to L.A. at some point. Yeah. And
Good.
Yeah, he's a very nice man. I met him in Chicago last year and in L.A. a couple of years before that.
Yeah. You did a great job.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal book. And we have 2 minutes left or so, but I just wanted to go through the book one more time. It's called The Young and the Restless Life of William J. Bell, written by Michael Maloney with Lee Philip Bell, and the foreword is by David Hasselhoff. And when does the book come out?
We are on sale now at Barnes & Noble.
Oh, you
it's
are?
Available
okay.
on Amazon.com, and on the 21st of June, we are having a signing at the Barnes & Noble at the Grove, which is located at Fairfax and Third in Los Angeles, next to Farmers Market. And about five different actors will be joining us, including Susan Flannery and John McCook of The Bold and the Beautiful, Lorelei Bell, Lee's daughter, who recurs on The Young and the Restless.
She's gorgeous.
Yes,
she's beautiful, yeah.
And also
Melody
Joshua
Thomas,
Morrow,
I think.
And Melody Thomas, yes, exactly.
Oh, cute. Yeah. I love Melody Thomas. Oh, how
yes.
fun.
Yes, Melody is wonderful. She's beautiful.
Beautiful, yeah. Well, all the soap stars and everybody associated with soaps, they're always just beautiful.
Oh, well.
So. All right, well, Katie and I just want to thank you both so very much for spending this hour with us. It's a big moment for us and a huge
well,
honor
for
to
us
have you.
Too.
Oh.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Had a great time.
Thoroughly enjoyed it.
Thank you for writing this book, too, because
yes,
what,
Michael,
what a legacy, what a testimony to how to live a good life. Thank you.
Well.
You're very welcome. Thank you. Thank you, Lee.
Yeah, it's beautiful. All right. Thank you very much. And Katie, stay with me. Lee and Michael, thank you again for joining us. And we hope you'll come back again, because this has really, really been fun, and we'd love to hear more. It's been just such a treat to talk to you for the fall. Yeah, I'd love to have you back on again. All right. Take care. Katie, aren't they wonderful? Oh,
I love that. I love the story about I might lose my job. Oh, that's so great. She is such a yes-to-life person, and it sounds like they really lived a beautiful life together. Really and inspirational.
And Michael Maloney, what a wonderful writer. It's a book that you can pick up, and you can actually just turn to different parts of it and read and then come back to it. And, you know, it's one of those books that I've had trouble putting it down since it arrived. So kind of fun. Yeah, very well written. We just loved having them today with us. They feel like they're part of our family.
Yeah, it was wonderful, really.
Thank you. All right. So what have we got going on? We're still recording. We've got a show on Sunday night. We've got Leslie Crusell coming on Sunday night at 7 p.m. That's about it. I think I'm going to go enjoy the sunshine because it stopped raining here in Maine. What do you
have?
Your birthday? Do you have birthday parties?
We had a birthday party last night, and then we just had a wonderful time, and we're packing. We're moving.
Oh yeah, is that this weekend?
We're starting this weekend. Well, actually, it's dance recital weekend, and then we're starting to move at the same time. So everything's kind of converging.
Very busy. Well, with the four boys here, I have baseball all weekend long. So there are playoff games and everything going on. So it's just crazy. So, all right, let's give one more mention to the book, and then we'll go for the day and see everybody Sunday night at 7 p.m., which is June 10th. We have Leslie Crusell coming on. So the book, again, is called The Young and the Restless Life of William J. Bell, and he's the creator of The Young and the Restless and The Bold and the Beautiful. It's just an absolutely gorgeous book, so in-depth with this family's life. And it's written by Michael Maloney and Lee Philip Bell, and it is on sale wherever books are sold. Right?
And great Father's Day gift.
Oh, I think so, too. All right. Take care, Katie. Good luck moving. And thank you so much.
Have
again
a great day.
Philip Bell and Michael Maloney. Thank
Bye.
You.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Best Ever You Show. Want more? Visit us at besteveryou.com. Be your best and keep it real. Confident, successful, caring, and beautiful every day with Best Ever You.